Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about web accessibility with Mike Passiello from the Passiello Group.
Mike is a pioneer in the field of assuring that websites are accessible to everybody, whatever their disability. He's helped develop standards, does audits for, advises on, and is a strong advocate for web accessibility. And towards the end of this program, we'll be discussing some tools that he's developed to assess the accessibility of websites. But first to our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Mike Passiello.
There's one thing I think that is really crucial. It's something that TPG is focusing on more, and we really want to encourage companies. I'll say two things to focus on. From a web standpoint, web application, focus on the World Wide Web Consortium's Web Content Accessibility Guidelines version 2 and strive for what's called AA or level 2 compliance. That is the international standard. It's an ISO standard. It is the standard that's being adopted by the federal government in the U.S. and most international governments as far as federal mandates are concerned. The second thing I would say is work on user experience. And by that, I mean start focusing on what it means to design an application for users with disabilities, various disabilities, blind, deaf, low vision individuals with various physical and fine motor skill disabilities. Focus on that and do user testing. Don't try to rely on even the experience of some of the best engineers in the world, which I think TPG has several of them. You need to test your applications with users with disabilities to ensure that that experience is accessible to them.
Why do you think there are lags in making programs accessible?
This, I think, is something that is unfortunately true for the entire software industry. They don't think about accessibility from the get-go. And because they don't, by the time the applications get to mass market, they're so far behind from an accessibility standpoint that the amount of work that has to be done to enhance those applications for accessibility becomes a lot of work. And we're always in catch-up mode. I am happy to say, though, that there are a couple of our clients now who are also equally large software corporations who are starting to, so to speak, drink the Kool-Aid. And they are working at the design level and implementing accessibility at the start. You'll start to see things from certain corporations where their releases are much more accessible than they ever were. And, you know, from a screen reader perspective, much easier to use.
Yeah, it's very difficult to retrofit some of these programs. There's no substitute for well-designed and thought-out and structured program beforehand. If you try to patch it in, it's just very difficult.
I've never seen an application out of the box yet in my 30 years of being in the software accessibility field that was out of the box, totally accessible. I also have never seen an application that we could not enhance and make it accessible. So, you know, you've got both sides of that coin.
But at least developers are thinking more about accessibility these days, certainly a lot more than they used to a few decades ago. And many programs and screen readers are making our devices and computers more accessible.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Mike Passiello and learn about the Passiello Group, which he was referring to earlier as TPG.
Can you start by introducing yourself?
Hi, my name is Mike Passiello. I'm the CEO and founder of the Passiello Group.
And so tell us what that company does.
The Passiello Group is actually a software accessibility consultancy company. A lot of folks tend to think that we focus on the web, but that's pretty much because that's where technology and accessibility seem to be really focused right now, particularly where people with disabilities are concerned. But TPG for almost 12 years. We focus on software accessibility for every platform, whether it's on the web, whether it's on a standalone PC, whether it's on a mobile device, a cell phone, smartphone, on an Apple device. It doesn't matter. All of our clientele, from that perspective, are cross-platform. We even work on some government systems and commercial systems that, believe it or not, are still what we used to call green screen applications or mainframe applications, and work with them to make them usable and accessible to people with disabilities.
How do you draw the distinction between the two?
By accessible, more often than not, most organizations will say if you make your website standards compliant, then you're meeting, for example, the standards for accessibility. But that doesn't necessarily mean that a blind user with a screen reader, or low vision user, the screen magnifier has an optimized user experience where the application is concerned. They may have access to the features and functionality on a particular web page, for example, or within a particular application, but the user context and whether it makes sense to them within the application itself may not necessarily be well constructed.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I see many applications or many websites where my screen reader gives me access to all the elements and features on the page, but it may be laid out in such a way that it's confusing because it's just jumbled in terms of how I see it, or just too much clutter.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And part of that problem, frankly speaking, is that corporations that work towards meeting technical standards, and perhaps the more likely scenario are legal standards, are looking to try and meet the minimum criteria of what those standards require. So, you know, in a very simplistic way of saying it, if there's an image on a page, a blind user using JAWS or Window Eyes or MVDA will want to know what that image is all about, what the meaning is. So you put, you know, alternative text attached to it. But that same image may be crucial to the user's experience for some reason or another. Maybe it's just a form button, and alt text wouldn't even be the right way to make it usable, but even from a standard standpoint. But it just may not work well because the order of the form, for example, is inaccurate or incorrect.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is what's involved in making the web accessible to all.
If you had to give one of your clients some advice on what are the two or three biggest things they could do to make their websites accessible, what are the biggest things that people run into?
Boy, I got to tell you, that's a tough one. I don't know that there are two or three, but there's probably half a dozen. But let me run off a few obvious ones that every company should really be concerned with. And I'm going to take this from the perspective that there's a lot more consumer interaction today than ever before. That's why you see a lot of the legal lawsuits involving online retailers and service-based organizations. First and foremost, the forms that require user interaction on a web page need to be properly marked up. That's the technical term, so that they are usable and accessible to screen readers and screen magnifiers and people with disabilities. That's one of the number one things. Usually people will tell you, make sure every image or most images have alternative text, particularly, again, this is beneficial for individuals who are blind. It's also very true for individuals with certain cognition disabilities like dyslexia and learning disabilities. But forms are a real big thing. And almost every legal suit that I've seen now in the last few years has been because a user could not complete a transaction, you know, with a bank or with a retailer. If you have tables that are data tables, and it's a presentation of information, those tables on the web page need to be properly marked up for accessibility. The other thing that we're really running into from our standpoint now is the use of, you know, basically what are dynamic applications, or what's commonly known as rich internet applications.
This is the ARIA stuff, A-R-I-A, that you were talking about here.
Exactly. And the big concern there is that because interaction at that level is dynamic, that is, it depends on what a user does. So if I click here, it results in something. Or, you know, from a person who is visual, you know, they may hover their mouse or they're trying to achieve focus in one way or another. Those interactions are very dynamic now. So using something like ARIA, which is the Accessible Rich Internet Application Standard promoted and promulgated by the World Wide Web Consortium's Web Accessibility Initiative Program Office, you have to have the proper landmarks in there to help a user navigate and then understand what the meaning of a particular object or, I hate to use technical terms, but we call them widgets, you know, programmatic objects that people interact with in a web page. Those are big things. The other big area that we really find that we have to work with, I'll name two more. Color contrast have to be done well. There are standards around color contrast for a population of individuals who have color blindness in one form or another. And then the big thing right now is multimedia and making sure that at bare minimum, you've got captioning in there for the deaf. We also try to encourage clients to focus on descriptive video for the blind and low vision.
You talked earlier about W3C. Many of our listeners may not be familiar with what that is. Can you talk a little bit about W3C and what it is, what its goals are?
Yeah, the W3C is the World Wide Web Consortium. They essentially own the standards for the World Wide Web. The director and founder of the W3C, in fact, is the founder and inventor of the World Wide Web, Tim Berners-Lee. And essentially, most standards related to the web and technologies developed for the web are organized and promulgated through that organization. So it's a consortium mostly of for-profit organizations, although they're educational, government, international. It's very international in scope. And their job is basically just is to work on the web. That's what they do.
And I gather that you personally and your company have some role in the W3C.
Directly. We have individuals like Steve Faulkner, who actually is one of the HTML5 editors. So HTML is basically the language for the web. For all intents and purposes, it's called the hypertext markup language. And Steve Faulkner is one of TPG's leading consultants and director of our European technical group there. And he's also an editor on that specific specification. We have a couple of other folks, Jez Lemon and Hans Hillen, who also work in various areas with the W3C. Most of their work is involved with one of the program offices. In fact, the program office that manages all the accessibility efforts for the web, and that's the Web Accessibility Initiative. It's a program office that I founded back in 1997 and is directed by Judy Brewer. Since later in 1997, she was hired as director. She's been there ever since. And their role is to promulgate, promote, and develop the standards for accessible web, yeah, all the way around the world.
So what is the distinction between W3C and the Web Accessibility Initiative?
The Web Accessibility Initiative is a program office within the World Wide Web Consortium. So the consortium is a big organization that has many program offices within it, and the WAI, that's WAI, is one of them.
So now, in the course of all of your work on accessibility, I understand from your website that you've written a book on web accessibility. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I also had the privilege of writing the very first book on web accessibility called Web Accessibility for People with Disabilities. I wrote that book shortly after I launched the Web Accessibility Initiative. I think it came out in press in 1999 or early 2000. I actually wrote it in 98. It was exactly what the book describes. It was kind of a starter book. It introduced the rest of the world to accessibility for people with disabilities. The book gave an overview of the various disabilities and the various communities of individuals with disabilities who are affected by a non-accessible web. It talked about, at the time, various laws and international standards that were available, the Americans with Disabilities Act, Section 5A, Section 504, things along those lines to give people some idea of the standards and the federal mandates, both here in the U.S. and international mandates that were in place. It introduced people to technology used by individuals with disabilities, assistive technologies like refreshable braille displays and screen readers and screen magnifiers to try to give them some idea of what users with disabilities use in order to interact with their PC and then, of course, with the web. And then it served as a resource for providing a series of guidelines that have been developed within the Web Accessibility Initiative, the first set of content accessibility guidelines and how to use those and how to build those into a website.
In the last 15 or so years, obviously, some of the hardware and some of the standards and some of the practices have evolved, but it sounds like a lot of the content of that book is still relevant. Is the book still available?
Oh, you can still get the book. I've been approached many times to revise the book. And in fact, right now I'm entertaining doing exactly that. So it's very likely in the next year or so, I will probably revise the book and put out a second edition of it. But you're right. Bottom line, the principles, the technologies, even on the emerging tech side, we still basically use browsers, you know, more or less, to interact with the web. The average user does. From a blind or low vision person standpoint, they're still using screen readers and screen magnifiers. Some of them are embedded with an operating system like an iPad or an iPhone using VoiceOver. But still, all of the bottom line principles there for accessibility are built into that book.
And we will have the link to getting that book on Amazon in the show notes on our website.
You mentioned that you're doing more than just web accessibility. You're also involved in accessible document design. And I understand you're active with ICAD, the International Committee on Accessible Document Design. Can you talk about that a little?
Sure. Well, actually, ICAD ran its course, and so it's no longer an active group. But ICAD was the very first organization that I formed along with George Kircher, now with DAISY, formerly with Recordings for the Blind and Dyslexic, RFB&D.
Yeah, they're now called Learning Ally.
Right. So George and I, along with some other colleagues, formed the International Committee for Accessible Document Design. And what we did was we created the first documentation standard for converting electronic documentation to screen reader accessible, screen magnifier accessible, and voice ready documentation. And that was based on the existing standard, this is before the web, called the Standard Generalized Markup Language, or SGML, that was done for publications and books. So there is a standard called the ICAD 22, which is officially a technical standard that maps various elements of an electronic document, for example, lists and paragraphs and headings and figures, and makes a transformation so that screen readers and braille translation software and braille readers and braille printers can then just transfer those files right to the language of that particular device.
And the reason ICAD is no longer active, is that because the screen readers are getting so sophisticated?
Well, you know, ICAD kind of became a precursor for what we were trying to accomplish at that particular time, which was documentation accessibility. So I would say really ICAD ran its course because since then, new standards like the DAISY standard for electronic publications and the EPUB standards have come out. So SGML really is kind of an obsolete language now. It's still out there, but for all intents and purposes, it's run its course. It's just a matter of obsolescence as far as technology and markup and print production is concerned. Most users with disabilities who are interested in reading books now use the DAISY standard, which from my understanding, I just was with George a couple of weeks ago, and George told me that the EPUB standard is apparently going to indoctrinate the DAISY standard, and then you'll have one single standard for basically multimedia e-reader publications.
Yeah, we've talked with some people from DAISY and Bookshare, and it sounds like it's pretty exciting that, you know, this EPUB 3 is going to contain a lot of those kind of features that you know, we've been used to with our DAISY readers and formats.
Now for this week's high-tech item, automated tools that Mike Passiello and the Passiello Group have developed for assessing the accessibility of websites.
One of the main thrusts of your company is that you provide accessibility audits for other people developing web pages, but apparently you're also developing the A-Viewer.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a tool that can be used to assess how accessible a web page is. Can you describe that a little better?
Sure. And I think I want to make sure I emphasize A-Viewer as a tool is a small application tool that we give. It's free that you can download from the PassioGroup.com website. And it was invented by Steve Faulkner along with some help from a couple of our other developers, including Jez Levin and Hans Hillen. But it's essentially A-Viewer is what we call a quality assurance inspection tool. So it goes down into the code level of a web application and looks at every programmatic item within that web page. It's a little difficult to describe, but in a sense, a web page obviously is not just text. It's a software application, so it's got buttons and it's got form fields and it's got all kinds of what we call programmatic constructs. And A-Viewer allows a person who is analyzing their page to look at and inspect, as it were, each of those objects and controls and determine whether or not they have been properly coded or include the proper accessibility coding so that an individual using an assistive technology along with whatever their browser or we call user agents is to easily render that page so that it's accessible to them. If they're a blind person through a screen reader, if they're low vision through a screen magnifier, if they're, you know, an individual who uses a braille display, again, all of them need to be able to render certain information about a particular object or feature or function or control on that page.
So undoubtedly there are other tools out there that developers have put together for assessing the accessibility of websites. What makes A-Viewer unique?
Our tools that we create, and A-Viewer is just one of three or four that we create. We also have the web accessibility toolbar that kind of fits into your browser. We have the color contrast analyzer. But our tools are really made for software engineers and quality assurance engineers to go in at the deep level. We're looking at the APIs, if you will, of a software application and ensuring that the accessibility APIs that have been developed by the Microsofts and the Apples and the Googles of the world, in fact, do deliver the information about the programs and the, again, the programmatic objects that they create within an application, that they really do have the accessibility, we call them hooks, the accessibility information so that it can be properly rendered by an assistive technology. The other tools that you see out there tend to be very high level. You know, is there alt text on an image? Is this the right kind of list? Has the table been coded properly? So they're good. I kind of like to use them sometimes for high level overviews, but they don't do the kind of very deep level, very manually intensive auditing that TPG does. Obviously, we use our own tools. But it's because we've got so much experience at this level, our engineers do. We know what to look for. We know what to code for.
So now anybody who understood everything else you just said will know what an API is. But just in case there's somebody out there who understood you and doesn't know what an API is, can you define that?
Yeah, an API is kind of a programmatic language. It's a layer that allows a program to interact with, in this case, particular types of devices. So there are accessibility APIs, for example, on the Microsoft platform. There are two that are well known called Microsoft Accessibility, MSAA, Active Accessibility, and UI Automation is what's in some of the newer versions of the operating system. There is iAccessible 2. These are APIs that expose information that is critical for the rendering of what a particular program or website or web application is trying to tell in assistive technology. It's a special language, if you will, to interact with an AT.
So these are the features that essentially will tell my screen reader some secret information that isn't readily available to sighted users about what the function of this button is or the state of this control.
You got it. Exactly. That's exactly the kind of thing it exposes. And it's not the type of thing a user would necessarily care about, but you care about it when suddenly, you know, you can't figure out why you can't interact with your bank because, you know, those properties on those objects and controls have not been properly coded for accessibility. This tool goes out and says, this is why, there's the information. You know, the role of this particular button has not been described. The state of this particular form is unknown because it hasn't been properly coded.
And that will give the web developers some very specific feedback as to what they can change in the program of the page to make that more accessible and more functional for the blind user.
That's exactly correct. And maybe just equally important is that the tool has been designed to work and to look like standard quality assurance inspection tools that work just like this. So while we built ours strictly for accessibility because that's the only business that we're in, there are all kinds of quality assurance applications that run exactly like this, but they're not looking for accessibility. They're looking for other things, you know, that are more typical to the rest of the world.
How would people get in touch with the TPG group if they needed to avail themselves of some of your services?
Well, you can go right onto the website, and there's a link right there for a Contact Us page. If you want, I can give you the URL for that.
Yeah, please.
Our webpage is paciellogroup.com.
You'll have to spell that for our listeners.
Sure. It's PACIELLOGROUP as in Paul, .com. And if you send email to info@paciellogroup.com, then our folks will get right in touch with you.
What's the phone number for the Paciello Group?
Area code 603-882-4122.
As usual, if you missed any of the links or phone numbers that we've given, they will all be in the show notes, which you can find at our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. That's it for show number 1330. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about performing in and leading choral groups. There are many visually impaired musicians, but performing and leading a large ensemble bring up special challenges for people who can't see. And we will also talk about how Alex Krauth reads music, and in her free time, she enjoys surfing. So we'll talk about that too.
If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at _EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day. Thank you.